And it's Hump Day Wednesday, 1:07 in the afternoon. I want to thank you for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our talented and wonderful Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. It's Halloween Eve. Are you dressing up tomorrow, Bridget?
Yes.
Are you? And what are you dressing up as? Or is it a surprise?
I wouldn't say it in advance. It took me a while to find something ag-related. And I opened myself up for the potential problems because I even asked the question on Twitter, you know, what's a good costume?
Right.
And people were really helpful. They were respectful. I didn't get a lot of weird things. But let me put it this way. Somebody suggested that when they think of me, they said strawberry shortcake. And I thought, that'd be fun.
Right.
So I went to look for a strawberry shortcake costume. And let me just tell you, that's not the strawberry shortcake I remember. They were very different.
A little more provocative strawberry shortcake, I'm sure.
I will not be strawberry shortcake tomorrow. Okay. Just wanted to make sure we clear that up.
Well, I was thinking of what I wasn't going to dress up. I'm thinking, yeah, I just not in the mood, you know. And then I had a revelation come over me on my way to work today. And so if Steve is listening,
there special music playing, was there like sunbeams?
There was
down?
Yeah.
What happened?
So okay. if our owner is listening, Steve, I'm just going to apologize. They always say, you know, apologize in advance, or sometimes they say ask for forgiveness, but you know, apologize afterwards, but I'll just apologize in advance for my costume tomorrow. Remember, it's Halloween. So,
yes. Okay.
Nobody can get mad. It'll be, it's been nice working
I'm
with you, Bridget.
I'm not coming in tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see.
I'm not coming in to see that.
If I'm not here, if I'm not here on Friday, we'll get you a replacement. Don't worry.
I'm already making a list.
Okay.
In actuality, I kind of am, because I've been sharing the fact that we're looking for students who could be a once a month student ag director with us. They would come in, and I'm looking for like one kid a month, so it could be a different student every month that they're going to talk about our headlines. They're going to help us ask questions of guests. I just think this is a fun opportunity, and I would love to see more students who send in an application. I sent that out to ag teachers, to 4-H. I'm trying to figure out a way to how to get that onto our Facebook page, but I'll get there. Maybe a little slow some days, but I will get that up there.
That's going to be great. It'll be interesting to see how many apply. And like I said, the 4-H kids that you had on with us before, they're so intelligent and just well-spoken and just cream of the crop. I mean, it's just... I don't know. I don't recall, and maybe I hung out with the wrong crowd. I probably did. I don't recall kids being that smart back in our day.
There's no doubt, and I think we're seeing that, especially those students that have participated in speaking events. Whether it's public speaking, ag communications, livestock judging, where they have to give reasons for how they placed a class. Those, you're seeing more of those skills coming out. And I'm so glad, because so often we hear, oh, kids don't know how to talk to anybody today. Mm-hmm. I think we can prove them wrong. And we can prove them wrong every month when we have an assistant ag director join us on air.
And, you know, it's public speaking or getting in front of a microphone or getting in front of an audience is very fearful for some. And a lot of people can't do it. And so for these kids, I'll call them kids, but, you know, young adults, for them just to be able to do that in itself and do it well that's awesome.
Well, I think this is a great, it's almost like a one-day internship, because you may think you want to do radio broadcasting or be a farm broadcaster, and then you may get done with the day and say, oh, no, I don't want to do this at all.
Right.
So let's find out now. And maybe you're going to love it. I'll be honest. We had a previous guest on our show, Max Armstrong, who you're very familiar with
from Chicago.
The Chicago area.
Yeah.
And with WGN Plus, Max has been part of the U.S. News and Farm Report for ages. Wonderful man. I sent him this concept and asked him for his ideas. And actually, some of the things that Max suggested, I incorporated into our criteria, because if you want to talk about a class of elegance of farm broadcasters, Max Armstrong is in that
list. How long has he been broad? It's got to be 40 years.
At least. Right? I can go look it up, but I think it's a little bit longer. And, you know, and his partner, Orion Samuelson, who was with him for many of those broadcasts.
Yeah.
Orion is into his 90s now. Yeah, I think he's over 90, probably close to 91.
Like I said, I remember growing up in Chicago and listening to those two on WGN. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Many people will have those memories.
Time flies.
We're all going to. If you're a farm kid, you have those memories of Orion Samuelson, Max Armstrong, and Paul Harvey. Those were voices you heard
Good day.
Every day.
Right.
Good day. So, yes, excellent. Speaking of excellent, it's breezy, but the weather's not bad.
It's not too bad. We're seeing increasing sun, although temperatures aloft are pretty cold. So once we get this sun out, the minimal heating that we get is building these cumulus clouds out there. So the rest of the afternoon looks okay. We're looking at partly cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon, with temperatures remaining in the 40s for today. It is a little breezy out there. North winds about 15 to 25. Partly cloudy tonight. We'll dip back into the 20s. And for Thursday, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. Highs a little cooler, low to mid 40s. And then clouds come back on Friday. It looks like mid-40s now. We were hoping for around 50, but I think clouds might give us a sprinkle or two. And then as we head into the weekend, pick day of the weekend is Saturday, although I've knocked the temperatures down just a touch. I think we'll be in the low to mid-50s on Saturday, but still good tailgating weather. And then clouds roll in late in the day on Saturday, leading to rain. Yeah, oh, some widespread rain. Sunday, Monday, into Monday night. So This could be one of our signature LRC storms with the track it's taking. There's no cold air available with this during cycle one, during the first LRC cycle.
Okay.
But as we get into cycle two and cycle three, if this is one of our signature storms, this could be a big snowmaker as we head deeper into the season. So that's good news. Again, moisture, we need it. And this one, assuming this holds the same track, and again, this is not set in stone. This is still out in the Pacific. So once it gets inland, we'll get a better handle on it. But it looks like it should be a pretty decent rainmaker around here. I mean, this last rain event, we only picked up about a tenth to two-tenths of an inch. There's a little bit more out in Lakes Country and much less in the far northern valley. So areas out to the west, though, Bismarck and the point southwestward from there picked up quite a bit. So some much-needed rain, albeit very light. This next system coming in early next week, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. That could be one of our signature LRC storms. But the one thing we're noticing as the first cycle of the LRC starts to unfold here is the lack of cold air. We just haven't had it. I mean, we haven't had any shots. I mean, even the shot of cooler air today, tomorrow, this just brings us back to normal. Then we warm back up above normal as we head into the weekend. And even looking out longer term, I'm just not seeing any long-lived cold air snaps around here. We can't get that cold air up in Canada to really dive south. So, this is some of the things we're starting to see unfold on the LRC. So we're starting to get a little better handle on what this winter is going to turn out to be. So don't the Farmer's Almanac. I just saw something come out from another private vendor, private weather company, already putting out the winter forecast, and it's just too early. It's too early. I was reading one of them. I won't say where it was from, and I'm like, okay. They gave three bullet points. I'm like, bullet point one, there's no way you can tell. Bullet point two, no way you can tell. Bullet point three, spot on. That's the only one I agreed with, so. I'm not going to say which one that is, but let's say it's going to be an up and down winter. I don't see, I don't think it's going to be as mild as last winter, but it's definitely going to be kind of a roller coaster ride winter.
Well, okay. Let's just hope for the best as far as travel conditions. And when you said potential snow, the first thing I started doing was looking at the calendar and thinking, where am I going next week? What's going to happen?
Yeah, you're fine next week. You're fine. But if anybody listening, if anybody is traveling into Minnesota tomorrow, let's say from St. Cloud to the Twin Cities and kind of a triangle from, let's say, Duluth, St. Cloud to the cities, They're going to get accumulating snow tomorrow, especially in the morning. So if you have any travel plans going going east on 94 into St. Cloud and points eastward from there, could be dealing with some slippery travel tomorrow morning. So kind of a heads up there.
All right. Yippee. And I won't be going there. It's not going to be my fault.
That's good. Finally.
Scott Johnner.
Finally. Well, we have, we have a wonderful returning guest coming on with us. I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you know Emily.
We do. That'll be Dr. Emily Fox. She's here with, she's from the Ashley Veterinary Clinic, and she'll be joining us today. I posed some questions to her that I got from listeners in regards to anthrax, which was found in Western North Dakota out in Adams County. So we're going to want to visit about that. And it is the time of the year where we see a lot of calves being weaned from the cows. What does that mean? There's folks that are wondering, and if you're doing 7-way vaccinations, what does that mean? So looking forward to talking about those things with Emily, helping her explain them, and pay attention. We always have great discussions with her today. So let's be ready. And if you have more questions, you can reach us on the Red Wing Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. Get ready and send in your questions starting now. Well, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Hopefully you guys all have as many questions as we do for our guest today, Dr. Emily Fox of the Ashley Veterinary Clinic. And also, we want to make sure that you know who our sponsors are for our Here We Grow project. We've combined our corn. Soon we'll be giving our profits to Farm Rescue and presenting them with a check for dollars that will be shipped off to Western North Dakota to help in the aid of folks who suffered in the wildfires with their livestock, their crops, and so much more. Homes were lost and everything. To those sponsors, it would be Dakota Bank right there in Fargo. And Dakota Bank is ready to help serve you. They are actually a fairly large bank based out of Aberdeen, South Dakota. They can help you with your dollars and cents and personal banking. And also they have great online tips to help you out. Then North Dakota Estate Services, Mark Wagner is there. If you decide that it's time to start a transition plan, maybe you have one and you need to improve it, give Mark Wagner a call. And lastly, Red Wing Shoes. Thanks to Red Wing Shoes, they did a wonderful job of helping us out in the field this year, making sure that we were outfitted from the time that it was muddy until it was a flash drought. I had my Red Wing boots whenever I needed them, thanks to Teresa and the gang on Main Avenue. So, Dr. Emily Fox, one of the questions that we have been getting from folks is, anthrax was found in Western North Dakota out in Adams County. And the initial reaction from many listeners was, but is that the anthrax that can hurt humans? So can you help us describe that, the difference between animals and humans?
Sure. So anthrax is a bacterial organism, Bacillus anthracis. So it's a bacilli. If anybody remembers from school, it's one of the like rod-shaped bacterias. All the anthrax is fundamentally the same organism. When we talk about anthrax harming humans, harming animals, and yes, the anthrax they found in Western North Dakota can cause disease in both humans and animals. However, when people are talking about, is that the anthrax that harms humans? A lot of people are remembering the 2001 anthrax terrorist attacks. That would be weaponized anthrax. So that's much more purified, much more concentrated. And so weaponized anthrax is a little different generally. It was developed as a bioweapon prior to the early 70s when the U.S. essentially signed treaties with other countries banning the use of bioweapons or limiting the use of bioweapons. I believe the first time it was used was during World War I. So it's been weaponized for a long time, although there's not proof of that, if I remember, like whether or not that was what they used. But there was an event in the late 70s, if I recall, where some weaponized anthrax did get loose in Russia. They tried to cover it up, but it became like a whole thing. So yes, I understand why people would be worried about that. Fundamentally, the anthrax that livestock get is generally a diluted form of that. So there are risks to both people and animals. To animals, you do tend to see sudden death. You would see kind of staggering and stuff. I've never seen an anthrax that wasn't dead. And most vets will say the same thing. Usually they're found dead. One of the hallmarks is that the blood generally won't clot. Now, that doesn't mean anytime you see a dead animal with blood coming out of its nose, it's anthrax. It's just something to consider. We try not to open the carcass, or if you do open the carcass, you want to be really conscientious of that because anthrax is a spore-forming bacteria. So essentially, anthrax is naturally occurring, and it can live in sporulated form. It can almost act like a mold and turn into a big spore, and it can live in the ground for like 100 years. It can just hang out there. In fact, somebody I know who lives in Western Minnesota, they were digging for a bridge near their property and the neighbors ended up with anthrax, and they found out years later that like there had been anthrax right around that farm, like almost 100 years prior, and it had come back and recrudesced. So essentially once it's re-exposed to air, it can do that. So, you know, when we have anthrax contaminated cattle carcasses, we tend to burn them. There's some evidence that bleach works against anthrax, but you can't like bleach a whole farm. So it is something to consider, you know, and it does generally tend to stay local, although it can be transmitted by mosquitoes and by other bugs, usually biting flies. But most transmission of anthrax is inhaled spores. So when those spores come out and an animal inhales them, usually cattle, right, because their nose is right on the ground, but other grazing animals as well. Grazing livestock tend to be exposed to the spores and they get the respiratory form, which is by far the worst. Humans are more likely to get the cutaneous form, which some people will call wool sorter's disease, I believe. And that's when you get a bunch of dead tissue. It almost looks like you have a chemical burn or a fire burn on your arm. And that's actually because the spores have tried to embed in your skin. Oof. Humans can get the respiratory form and they still do die of it. I'm not trying to minimize the impact of anthrax, but it's generally in countries where people live in the same cohabitation as livestock. That's generally how people get respiratory anthrax. Now, that being said, the weaponized anthrax of the early 2000s and the weaponized anthrax of the 70s, my understanding is they were super purified and put into a, put into a medium where they would be inhaled very easily. And inhalation anthrax is by far the most threatening. Gastrointestinal anthrax, however, is also a major killer of humans still in developing countries. That's when you eat an animal that's contaminated with anthrax. One of the reasons why, in my opinion, you should never butcher a sick looking animal unless you are absolutely sure that it looked fine and then maybe broke a leg or something. Some people will call and they'll say, well, it doesn't have a fever, I'm going to eat it. And I'm like, oof. You can do that, but offense, I'm not gonna eat at your house anymore, you know. And so that's something to think about. What, like, when we pick animals for food, right, we shouldn't be picking animals that look unhealthy. This is a good reason. So there are still parts of the country where people, or parts of the world where people do still eat animals that were like died under questionable circumstances because they don't have an option. Those are the places where you tend to see gastrointestinal anthrax, is my understanding. I'm hardly an expert on anthrax. If you think you have anthrax issues, it's important to talk to a state vet. It's important to look at the CDC's resources as well. But essentially, I would be concerned for my cattle if I had cattle and my, like, somebody in my really close area, like a close neighbor, came with anthrax, or even if they had had anthrax 50 years ago, I would still be worried about it. If it had never been in my area, I would be less worried. There are risk-based vaccines. They do, I believe, still give them to some active service members as well. There's a risk-based vaccine for people. It was actually one of the early vaccines developed by Pasteur, if I remember correctly, who developed the original vaccines for smallpox as well, and the original vaccines, essentially. But the other consideration that you have when you're vaccinating for anthrax is you obviously can't vaccinate for everything. It's a lot of shots to give an animal. It's not always, in my opinion, a great idea to just give a bunch of shots. Sometimes there's reasons not to. And so if you think there's an anthrax risk in your area, it's really important to consult your veterinarian, see A, if you have a risk, B, if they think it'll benefit your herd, or C, if they think there would be any detriment to vaccinating. And this is where I think it's really important, rather than just buying your vaccines off the shelf at a farm supply store, to talk to your vet and get them involved, because there may be very good reasons to do or not to do it. And also they may help you with when to give it, because there may be some timing issues.
And Emily, the livestock that do get the vaccine for anthrax, Is it a 100% cure? Not all the time, and is it still safe? I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that are probably thinking, well, I mean, man, I you know, if they're buying ground beef or a steak at the store, saying, well, man, I don't want to buy this if, you know, at one time, you know, that this animal had anthrax, even though they've had the vaccine. A, is it still safe? And B, is there any way to tell what you're buying if that's happened?
Well, you've asked a fairly loaded question in the sense of, is it safe to buy meat from vaccinated or treated animals? And I may get you a little bit of fan love and hate mail for this one. In my personal opinion, I think it's a animal welfare issue not to treat sick animals. And so whenever I see things that say like never treated with hormones and antibiotics, well, some animals get sick. So where do they go is my question. And a lot of those places don't have a conventional stream, and that concerns me. Now, some of them do, and then they put them in the conventional stream and you can just choose not to eat that, and that's fine. But not giving vaccines as a preventative does concern me a little bit. I, you know, vaccines are not having the disease, right? Those are two different things. I mean, essentially they let your body think you had the disease, but there's a very big difference between being bacteremic or viremic and actually replicating that bug in your blood and having a tiny bit of it that's either dead or inert introduced into your body to create an immune response. Those are not the same thing. I would not hesitate to eat an animal that has been vaccinated or treated. That being said, there are people who are concerned about that, and I'm very glad that we have some degree of regulation and labeling to help those people pick products that they feel comfortable with. My bigger concern would be as to effectiveness. I don't entirely know. There's not a ton of published data to my knowledge. I've never seen anthrax in a vaccinated herd, but what I can say is I also have seen very, very little anthrax overall because it's just not very common in my part of the country. I'm still East River. It's more of a West River thing. And honestly, it's more of an out West thing. We don't see it a lot. You do tend to see anthrax more in years when there's been a lot of wet, dry turnover, things that cause massive erosion, either a ton of wetness and then it dries out, or a really dry year where there's a lot of topsoil leaving. But it tends to be more prevalent in years when there's a lot of erosion. So that's something to think about as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, don't go anywhere. If you have any questions for Emily, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000, or shoot us an email, weather@flagfamily.com or ag@flagfamily.com. Emily, we've got a couple of questions from our email questions from our listeners, so we'll touch on that. But first, we got to check in with the American Ag Network.
Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, and it's a great day with our guest today, Dr. Emily Fox. Ooh, don't forget, folks, if you have questions, you can send them to us, not only by calling us on the Red Wing Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. You can send emails at Facebook on our Weather and Ag in Focus page, where you might be watching our live stream. We also live stream on YouTube and Acres TV. North Dakota Sweet Crude. It's made right here in the state. It's a great liquor that comes out at this time of the year for hunting after you're done with the day. Maybe at the end of harvest, don't forget to pick some up for the weekend. There's tailgating on Saturday, so I'll probably have to have some for my tailgating spot as well. Dr. Fox, we've got some questions for you that have been coming in, and one of them relates to weaning, because this is the time of the year we talk about weaning calves. Folks are wondering, what is that? And is it cruel for the calves? Do you want to talk about that just a little bit for us?
Sure. So I calve a lot later than most of my clients. I just have, I have a few cows. I don't have a ton of cows, but I calve a lot later than most of my clients because I want to make sure that I can help my cows and not be helping someone else's. So I actually just did my pre-weaning shots this weekend, and I'll probably be weaning in about 3 weeks. So I can kind of explain what weaning is for people who don't know, and then maybe talk a little bit about how to minimize stress at weaning, why we might wean. So weaning is when we talk about no longer allowing the calf to nurse from its mother. There's a lot of different ways you can wean calves. You know, for some people, they sell at weaning, meaning they take the calves and they take them right to the sale barn. Personally, that's not my favorite. I think it's really hard on the calves. I don't really think it's the easiest on the buyers who get the calves. So I don't really care for that, but I understand that sometimes for some people that works the best, and that's fine. Some people do what I do, which is called fence line weaning. So I wean the calves, but unlike somebody who maybe would wean them and have them far away from their moms are right across the fence. They just physically cannot nurse because their moms can come visit them and say hello, but they can't get in there to nurse. Although some will try to put their udders up next to the fence and the calves will try to get under. So maybe like a little bit. Some people will also allow the calves to stay with the cows, and then they'll put weaning rings in the nose. I tried this once. It didn't work for me, but I have a lot of clients who like it. So that's a ring where it kind of irritates the cow a little bit, and then they'll put it in the nose like this just temporarily. And then when the calf touches her, it kind of annoys her, so she won't let the calf nurse essentially. Weaning seems kind of cruel. Cows do self-wean in the wild, first of all. So under normal circumstances, eventually the cows will wean their calves. But it does take a lot out of the cows to keep them on that long, particularly in the environment we live in. One of my cows, you can already see that it's kind of pulling her down a little bit. And once they come in off grass, sometimes it's better to get the calf off of them sooner. The other thing is, you know, in herds that I've seen that don't wean, you know, it can affect a few other issues with the cow. You get too much stress of having that calf on them while they're also trying to grow their next calf. Plus that calf, some of my cows have already self-weaned their calves. These calves are big enough that mom is saying, like, you know what, that's enough already. But the other thing is, if you do have a cow that lets them continue to nurse and they nurse close to the time that the cow would have her next calf, they'll actually take away the colostrum or the first milk that that next calf needs to get a good immune system started. Oh, and so then there won't be any colostrum for that next calf. And that can be a huge issue, actually. In herds where they allow self-weaning, occasionally you get one or two cows that just don't self-wean their calves, and you will see their next calf a lot of the time will end up getting sick. Sometimes they'll even die because they don't have appropriate immunity because none of that colostrum builds up. That takes a long time to build up. It is also important for a cow to be dry. You know, even dairy cows, mm-hmm. we see this, other animals, it's important for them to have a period of time for their own health to kind of regroup. And if we just allow the calves to be on forever, some cows who are really, really sweet won't wean their own calf, and then they'll end up getting really run down. And places where they leave the calves on too long, you will see sometimes no matter how much you feed the cows, they will look run down. So it's important for the health of the cow. It's important for the health of the next fetus. And, you know, nobody really is weaning these calves when they're too young to wean, especially in the beef industry. Most of these calves are, you see them out there eating grass, doing their own thing, ready to go. And usually we try to do things to minimize weaning stress. There's a lot of different ways to do that, but trying to get them to start eating, you know, eating ground feed. Some people will put creep feed out while they're still with the cows just for the calves, with a little special gate so the calves can get in there and get used to eating like ground feed or whatever they're going to have at home. My calves, I see them eating grass all the time. I know that they're kind of getting ready and I watch them eat hay, but it's important that they understand how to eat. It's also important that we practice low stress handling when we wean them. There's a new product called Therapies. It's a pheromone that you spray on them. Some people like it, some people don't.
I just heard about this. A producer told me they just tried it. They literally run it down the forehead of the calf, and it mimics the pheromone from the mother cow so that they will still eat off the bunk. They feel less inclined to try to look for the cow. Would that be a way to describe it?
Yes, that is the right product. And so it's a pheromone. The pheromones have been of fairly limited effectiveness in other animals. It seems like most clients that I've had use it have had at least some positive effect from it. Not everybody's 100%. The problem is it's really hard to know definitively if it's working or not because it's fairly anecdotal. There's not a lot of great metrics you can use to say yes or no answer, this works. It's not like a vaccine for a disease where we can test for the disease and say, yeah, it worked. Like, we can see they don't have this disease. But most people have anecdotally, meaning like in their own experience, reported they see less stress evidence, less bawling for mom. The first usually 2 to 3 days, my cows will call for the calf and the calf will call for the mom. A lot of people have said that they've seen a lot of reduction in that. But there's a lot of other ways to minimize weaning stress as well. You know, getting them accustomed to feed, making sure that we're putting them on an appropriate ration when we wean them. Some people will use, there's these new probiotics you can use to help them get their stomachs accustomed to feed. And I think the biggest thing is too, a lot of people give their booster shots at weaning. You know, they give the booster shots and then as they let them out of the chute, they put them the other way. You know, they're already sorting them and they take them away from mom at that time. I think it's really important when you're doing this to remember to practice low stress handling when you are weaning. I cannot emphasize enough that if you work your cattle under stress, you will have problems for a variety of reasons. I know people will always say things, you know, there's all those cute t-shirts that say like, don't blame me for what I said when I was working cattle. And that's all well and good. But if you were screaming and hollering and chasing them with the four-wheeler, you're going to have problems. You know, that's not, I get it. Right. I get that we all get emotional, but it's really important. And it's really important to try to regulate our emotions and work things in a low stress manner. There is plenty of proof that high stress handling increases steroid hormones within the body from stress, right? We all know that stress negatively impacts human health. It also negatively impacts animal health. You really need to try to minimize stress in all the ways that you can. And a lot of that has to do with you. Like, I need to take a deep breath and yell over here instead of like being mad. So just remember, you know, stay calm and carry on. But I think it's really important to work on those stress minimizations. And that's where the therapies and stuff comes into. That's a stress management tool. And I think those tools can be really valuable.
And Emily, with the warm, dry fall weather that we've had, does that affect the weaning of the calves or their rate of gain at all?
It can. You know, it kind of depends on, in my opinion, if it's warm, that's one thing. If it's cold, that's one thing. But when it's up and down, where it's like, you know, cold in the morning where you feel like you need a jacket and by the end of the day you feel like you need a tank top, that is hard on them. They're growing their coat. It's a tough time of the year.
Right.
That is harder on cattle, certainly, and I always worry a little bit about that. my advice to people is always to just make sure that, again, if we do lower stress handling and we don't get them really excited, that would be preferable. And then making sure to remember, don't give shots to calves that are wet. If you can avoid it, that's how you get lumps and stuff, right? You carry, essentially, you can't really clip in for people who are not, who are not vaccinating calves on a regular basis. It's not really like going to the doctor's office where they're going to like alcohol your neck. First of all, that can actually inactivate parts of some of your live vaccines. You just don't want to do it. But the other thing is, it's not like we're going to clip all the hair and stuff. If the hair is dry, there's really just dust. It's really, you don't have a lot of issues, but wet cattle, you get a lot more stuff tracking on the needle. It's a lot dirtier. And so there's a lot more risk of having just a dermal reaction, a skin reaction, a lump, but that's not ideal. It affects the, it can affect the beef over time. It can also just affect the comfort of the calf. It can affect the price at the sales barn. So if you have the option, try not to work wet cattle. If you're working wet cattle, remember to just keep everything really clean, change your needles more often. All of those things matter. And remember, BQA guidelines, right? The Beef Quality Assurance guidelines, they're available online. You can get yourself certified. Please give shots in a BQA compliant manner. Please do not give them in inappropriate places with inappropriate needle sizes, or, you know, putting things that are supposed to be in the muscle under the skin and vice versa. And all that stuff is readily available online.
Those are great reminders. And in fact, I just got a press release this morning. There is an upcoming BQA training in Minnesota, and I'll have those dates available for listeners here very soon. Last question for you, Emily. That is, after the wildfires out in western North Dakota, what are things that producers should look for as potential problems? Pneumonia is one that comes to mind, but there's anything else that if you had cattle in the smoke or in the flames themselves, what are some things you should look for?
If I had cattle in that situation, I would be watching them very closely a couple weeks afterwards for any signs of illness. I would be concerned, first of all, you're absolutely right about pneumonia. That would be my primary concern, right? So pneumonia would be a whole bunch of different things. You can have the, I'm not an expert on smoke damage, I should say that. And I've been really, my clients were very fortunate. We were very far from this. And I treated very few fire victim animals or animals that were in fire areas. One thing I will say is if they were close enough to the smoke, my understanding is it can affect the villi system within the trachea. That's the little tiny fimbriae, the little fingers that are in your trachea that lift out all the junk that gets in your lungs. So these animals would be much more susceptible even to like basic bacterial diseases that normally an animal like that could fight off, because A, they had those stress hormones that we just talked about, because what could be more stressful than running from a fire? And then B, they might have singed fimbriae, so they may not be able to get all that junk out of their lungs. And so the combination could provide a pretty good opportunity for what we call opportunistic pathogens, meaning things that usually a body could fight off, now they may not be able to fight them off. So I would make sure that if they were really in it, you know, I would talk to my vet about considering maybe doing some preemptive treatment of some of the animals with metaphylaxis. But the other option would be making sure my vaccine protocol is really good, particularly for bacterial organisms, depending on what's in my area. The other things I would consider is that these animals may have a little bit of gastric, like loss of rate of gain or gastric issue from, you know, either switching hay, because we're getting a lot of hay in from other areas. If we were getting hay from other parts of the country, there could even be different weeds or things in there thinking about. And then the other thing is it may have very different nutritional value than the hay you're used to. So we've been very fortunate. A lot of people donated hay. A lot of people brought up hay to sell. You know, I'm incredibly happy that that happened. But just being aware that if you've used the same hay and you don't bother to get your hay tested because you feel like your hay is pretty consistent, you've used the same hay for 20 years, the hay that you just bought in, got given, whatever, may be a lot different. And it may be worth talking to your nutritionist or whoever does your nutritional work about maybe testing your hay this year. I know usually like your local extension rep can help with that, because if the hay is wildly different, it may be more nutritious than what you previously had too, but you may need to balance your diet accordingly. And that would be something I would be thinking about going forward as well.
Gosh, that's a huge important tip, Emily. I just had a producer from Illinois send me a message this morning. He sent a truckload of hay up to western North Dakota because he was getting grass hay, mowing out some ditches and so forth. And that could be, in fact, very different than what a producer would have been using up here in North Dakota. Great point. Emily, thank you. You are a wealth of knowledge. And I've already had comments, people saying, oh, these weaning tips are awesome. So where can people find you when they have more questions?
Sure. So I'm at the Ashley Veterinary Clinic in Ashley, North Dakota. Always happy to answer questions. We have email ashleyvetclinic@outlook.com. And we have a Facebook page, which someone else in my office has graciously started managing. So we have a Facebook page. Please let me know if you have any questions. We'll try to get in touch with you and give you a hand or point you in the direction of somebody in your area who could be of assistance.
Love it. I've been watching the Facebook page. It looks great. Especially, I even talked about on air the day that the dogs got in with the porcupine and you had to pull the quills and how many quills came out. So like your new page.
Oh,
thank you.
Those poor dogs.
I know.
The question is, did they learn their lesson? That's, hopefully it doesn't happen again.
You know, people always ask me if they learned their lesson, and luckily we don't have a lot of porcupines right in this area, so it's hard to say if they learned or not. But what I will say is it's incredibly painful. Oh. And if you've ever tried to pull quills, I actually ended up with a piece of a quill embedded in my hand the next day, and I had to go digging around in my own hand because I didn't realize I had a piece. So yeah, it's really painful. I can say that personally.
I just got the chills, literally. Oh, man.
Yeah. So if you see a porcupine, don't try to catch it. If you're not a dog, don't try to catch a porcupine. It looks painful.
Oh. That's advice. Oh. Thank you, Emily. Folks, stick around.
Thank you.
We've got some headlines and we've got headlines and weather to recap, and we'll be right back.
Thanks, Emily. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. It's 1:55 in the afternoon, and boy, kind of a cool day, but this is normal for the end of October. Now, I know it doesn't feel like it because we've been so spoiled for the last month and a half, but this is how it should be. A little breeze out there, temperatures in the 40s. So, Bridget, I brought something up to you off air that that Ty reported on our news on midday, and he reported that, it might have sounded, it caught my ear that our corn yield is 54% above what we were last year. Now, is that locally? Is that statewide? Or
I would want to clarify that number. I have to go back and listen to Ty's story.
Okay,
I really feel like that number would be. It would depend on the place that it came from. I don't think that's a U.S. number.
No,
I don't think our most of the corn yields felt like they were down.
Right. I think he said it was statewide, but that's why I wanted to ask you if you know.
So there's a couple of things that can influence that. There are areas of the state that did really well. When we get into that north central Devil's Lake Basin, they did not because they were so wet early on and there's a lot of late planted corn. Here's the other thing that could factor into that. Did we have more corn acres this year overall than we had other crop? Because if we lost wheat acres to corn, we're going to see an increase in the yield for our corn too. Corn turned out pretty well in many areas. There's still some corn that's being combined, and there's some corn that was still high moisture because of how late it was planted. If you took the gamble and you planted your corn early on in the spring, even though convention told you not to, that your soil temps were too cold, it was too early to plant corn, and you went ahead and did it anyway, you probably came out of that gamble really well. This year, I can't guarantee that'll happen every year.
Gotcha.
So there's some variability.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, we got time for a couple of ag topics. I'll let you choose today.
So there's some things to keep in mind. One of them is Syngenta, which is a crop and seed company, crop protection and seed company, and they have entered into an agreement with Taranis. Taranis has some of those incredibly huge drones that you see at farm shows, and their collaboration means that Taranis is going to fly drones over your fields, and then it's going to report back on some software down to a leaf level view. So if you are wondering what weeds are in there, bugs, disease, nutrient deficiencies, all of that will be reported back after the drone scouting. And then we'll be able to work with your Syngenta rep to decide what's the best treatment. Should we be changing a different hybrid or variety of corn or soybeans? Do we need to do a fungicide? What is that nutrient deficiency? And do we have to talk to somebody about whether it's side dressing in corn, et cetera? So it's really a unique collaboration, and they're planning on doing that over a fair amount of time. I think it's going to be a 3-year period. And then additionally, if you are a rancher and it's the end of the season and you're thinking, what's my forage going to look like next year in that pasture? Is it actually something that I'm going to be able to graze well next year, even though it's dry out? There is a Rangeland Analysis Explorer. As a user, you can actually draw out your map via satellite on their website, and you can choose where you're at. It's going to calculate end of season forage productions and then give some estimates of where it could go next year. So new technology on the horizon for everyone.
Awesome. That's great. And, you know, I mean, that'll continue to improve over the years, too, with all the new technology and, wow, amazing.
Every bit will.
No doubt. Yes. No doubt. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Don't go anywhere. The number one show in the Northern Plains, Jay Thomas Show, is coming up next.